Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. So good to have you with us. We are live from Austin, Texas on Veterans Day. Special word of thank you to all the veterans out there who have sacrificed so much to be a part or to make us have this country and be able to do broadcasts like this, be able to say what we want. Freedom of speech, what a blessed, wonderful thing. At least we've got it now. Let's hope we can hang on to it as long as we can. But a special thank you to all the veterans who served our country and especially their families of those who paid the ultimate sacrifice, that gave up family members. And I'm thinking right now of our business partner, Chuck Klein, whose dad died and was killed in when he was a fighter pilot and shot down over North Korea. And it's real. It's real when we're talking about it. It's amazing when I was talking to Chuck earlier today, the emotion that rose up as I realized my business partner lost his dad in Korea. I mean, it touches real lives. This is real. And the veterans, what you're doing is so real, it touches our hearts, and we appreciate you so much. Winston Churchill's quote is so applicable even now. Never was so much owed, or is so much owed, by so many for so few for the freedoms that we have. We appreciate the sacrifice that all our veterans are making. We appreciate it, especially as we look at this election season that just took place and realize that we get to vote and bring in a new president. Now, I'll tell you, for many of us, this election didn't go as anticipated or, quite frankly, as desired. But the reality is, it is America, and the Americans voted. And we have a new election. We have a new president. We have another 4 years with Barack Hussein Obama as our president. And we're going to be talking about that later in the broadcast. What does this mean? What is another 4 years with this administration? This is America. We're still in control. We, the people, still run this country. Sometimes you get to wonder about it. If you're a mortgage banker and have dealt with CFPB recently, you do wonder if who's in control here. We are, and we cannot forget that. There's no question that we have an interesting future ahead of us, and we're going to be talking about that. We have special guest Les Parker, president of Parker & Company, as well as Al Durso, who is a senior market analyst for Thomson Reuters. Having them on in the Hot Topics segment later in the broadcast here a little bit, really excited about get their perspective on what we can anticipate from a policy standpoint looking forward, as well as a pricing, mortgage-backed securities, the liquidity, GSEs. We're going to get a lot of questions asked. You're going to want to stay tuned all the way to the end of the broadcast when we get into that part of the broadcast. Anyway, we got our normal lineup. We're so excited about that. But a special thank you goes to Alamode, who has become a recent sponsor of our broadcast. We're so thrilled to have them a part of it. We talked about it last week, but in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, the Mercury Network, which is owned by Alamode, or Alamode owns that, I'm sure which one's the legal entity, but Mercury Network is waiving all transaction fees for their product called the Catastrophic Disaster Area Inspection Reports. Normally they charge for those, but because of what's going on in the Northeast, it gets appraisers back to work, and as a result, it really helps them respond to the catastrophe that took place with Sandy. The demand is up over 200 times normal levels, and so they gave up income so that we could have responses to that market. A real special thank you goes out to our friends at Mercury Network, Alamode. And for this report, it's a triage tool that gives lenders a quick assessment of whether the property is still viable collateral, something you can learn more about. Go to Mercury Network's website by going to www.mercuryvmp.com/Sandy to get more information. Again, good to have Alamode as a partner on the broadcast. Joe Farr, you got the holiday off. So the day off. So you're sitting there at home, and you're probably, I'm just sitting here with your fuzzy slippers on and kicked back in front of your home computer. And I know, you always dress sharp, no matter probably all the time when you're at home.
Sure. Well,
it's good to have you on the broadcast, and I appreciate you taking time on your day off to come in and give us a market update. So what do you have for us, Joe?
Well, as you mentioned, nothing today. Markets are closed. So we'll jump right into last week, and that was certainly an interesting week, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
We had we had the bond-friendly candidate one. MBS opened up on Wednesday about three-quarters of a point following the election. Ended the day up not quite that much, but then they continued the rally on Thursday. And by the end of the week, on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, MBS prices had improved about three-quarters of a point. And so it was the bond-friendly candidate, kind of like we expected. If Obama won, we felt like MBS prices would improve. And unfortunately, the other side of that happened as well, in that the stock market fell. Over that same time period, Dow's down about 400 points. So, all was not rosy. But anyway, as far as mortgage-backed security markets go and MBS prices, we saw a nice improvement.
Yeah. No
other
question.
Than that, it's a little hard to identify, or it's either give all the credit or all the blame to the election. There was news out of Europe on Wednesday morning that also weighed in on that MBS price improvement and stock market fall. The ECB president announced that the outlook for growth in the Eurozone was slowing, and that was not good. And then in Greece, there was a planned strike that turned violent, so that also weighed in on the market some. So you can't give all the blame or all the credit, whichever way you look at it, to the Obama victory, but certainly that was a big part of it. We'll talk about how that weighs in on the market going forward a little later in the show.
Yeah.
Last week, there wasn't a lot of significant economic events to talk about. The one of note came out on Friday when consumer sentiment came out at the highest level since pre-meltdown, since July of 2007. So that was a good way to end the week. The Treasury auctions last week could have been important, but they really didn't play a big role in things. The 3, the 10, and the 30 auctions happened last week, and they were average, weak, and strong in that order. So it's hard to draw much from that. It was a big week last week. Not a whole lot this week to look at least not in the U.S. economic calendar. Actually, there are some pretty big things, but we don't expect CPI or PPI to be a big factor on the market.
Big market movers, yeah.
No, PPI has been tame, and CPI has been tame, and we'd expect that to continue. Retail sales does come out on Wednesday along with PPI, and the FOMC minutes come out on Wednesday as well, and again, that's not something that you'd expect to be a big market mover. It feels like the market pretty well knows where the Fed stands, and ever since the meeting in September when they announced the big QE3, there's been pretty much a consensus as to the direction they're taking. CPI comes out on Thursday. New York Empire State Index comes out on Thursday, and then industrial production on Friday. But we also, as Europe's been weighing in on the market, we ought to keep in mind a couple of things going on their calendar this week. I believe that the Greek Parliament has passed the required legislation to
take
the next step in getting the Eurozone to finance their debt, which was a big nice thing to get out of the way, although it's not a done deal. On Thursday, there's the French, the German, and the Spanish, Dutch, Italian. A lot of the Eurozone members are going to announce their third-quarter GDP, and hopefully that's not too shocking, but it could be a market-moving event if it comes out terribly weak. And that's pretty much it, Dave.
Well, that is an interesting update. So it's a light week today, this week, and we'll see what happens. But Europe, all eyes kind of return to Europe now that things settle down here a bit at home, it sounds like. So.
Well, certainly the fiscal cliff and all its discussions is way in on the market.
Yes.
But, that's so fresh after the election. I'd be interested to hear what the guests have to say about that. But, no one's expecting anything to be announced immediately.
No.
We'd all like it to.
We would, but that never quite worked that way. But I'm really interested in getting in Al's thoughts later on. Al Derso's thoughts later on the market. He sits there. He's a senior analyst, so we're going to have some really good content coming up here a little bit later, Joe. So we'll save some space for that. But thanks so much for taking time when you're sitting near there at home to be a part of the broadcast. Appreciate it so much. Again, folks, for those of you needing to learn more about or desiring to know more about MBS Quoteline, go to their website, www.mbsquoteline.com. Outstanding service. I use it constantly. Love it. It's a great tool. Here, stay tuned. We'll get to learn a little bit more on how you can sign up.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. Appreciate it. Again, happy Veterans Day. I almost said Labor's Day. But happy Veterans Day. Let's not rush things. This calendar's flying fast enough. Alice Alvey is out with clients, but she's taking time, so a special thank you to her clients. I'll let her carve away a little time to be a part of the broadcast. She's bringing us a legislative update, and Alice, it's always, what part of the country are you at this week, Alice?
I'm actually in Michigan today, but California tomorrow, so.
That's right. Well, you are just covering the planet, helping people get prepared for all that's coming and what's going on in the industry. You can't, I mean, your training services, Alice, we keep talking about it, but it's just outstanding. But let's get in talking about the legislative update and the market. Give us an update, if you could.
I sure will. Well, obviously no one's there today. They're all recovering from the election. So we'll hopefully start to see, you know, and as you could tell by our next callers, they're all going to be a little bit more focused on this fiscal cliff that is obviously headlines. The main mortgage piece that I'm going to be watching in this last segment of the year is anything related to the FHA Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund. Certainly we have plenty of proposed rules, but as far as from CFPB, but as far as legislation goes, you know, we've got this House Bill 4264 that passed a little bit ago that was proposing to raise the monthly MIP. I actually have a meeting next week, Monday, before our radio show next week. The Mortgage Bankers Association, we're having our FHA working group call. We'll be reviewing the HUD actuarial study, the most recent one, and maybe that'll give us some clues as to whether or not we think there's a lot of negatives out there that Congress is going to get after this issue, or we think FHA can actually maybe come off the radar for a little bit based on its financial condition. So we're going to be analyzing that right before the radio show. So I'll have news hot off the presses. I'll have a chance to dissect it then, too. So so that is number one, really, is at least for our group, is to watch FHA MIP premiums. The other one is just in terms of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Hopefully everyone got their comments posted because they're all closed now. Comment periods are closed. You needed to get your 2 cents in about RESPA and TILA. So we're certainly going to be watching that for you. I think the first one that we should see some action on is going to be loan originator compensation because CFPB has their deadline in the middle of January in order to beat Dodd-Frank. So we're definitely hoping that the proposed rule, that we get a final rule on that, so at least we have some better direction on that. I know a lot of companies look at loan officer compensation at the end of the year, trying to think about should they revise their plans. Maybe that's another show, Dave, to talk about that because overhead's going up, right? So
that's right. Consumers are paying more. Overhead's going up thanks to our friends there at government.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely maybe that's a show to talk about for the future. But last but not least then is fair lending analysis. Everybody, I need you to get that you really take a good look at your numbers. Take a good look at what are the interest rates you're offering to the various groups and protected classes under the Equal Credit Opportunity Act and Fair Housing Act, and start taking a look at your pricing differences, product differences, and start to try and get an understanding of how is loan officer compensation potentially impacting your numbers, because we've been having some discussion lately with, you know, if I have a loan officer at a low amount of basis points versus the high number of basis points, could that be creating any differences in pricing that customers receiving? So that's my that's my heads up for today. Is to, if you need any help, we're happy to help you with what you should be looking at. We're also working with customers on risk analysis because we're certainly finding that companies have to revisit that constantly. What's a good loan from an underwriting standpoint as well? So that's a good time to analyze fair lending risk along with underwriting risk as well. So that's my update for today, Dave. And
that's
take it away.
Update.
We have a great guest today.
I'm excited about that. I know, Alice, you can't stay on the broadcast so because you're busy there with clients. I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be a part of the broadcast and just giving us an update. And a special thank you to all our friends there at MortgageU and Wetzel Trott for helping us keep our audience up to date. You have yourself a wonderful week, Alice.
Thank you all. Have a great day.
You bet. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin'.
Good to have you with us. Appreciate you being part of the broadcast. We have special guests today. We always get these opportunities to get some really intelligent, smart people to come on the radio broadcast, give you, the listeners, an update on all that's going on. I'll tell you, our guests today, this week, are just, I'm really excited to have both these two individuals. Someone who's well known to all of you, Les Parker of Parker & Associates, is with us, as well as a good friend of his, Albert Durso, who is a senior market analyst for Thomson Reuters, and he's a senior market analyst of MBS International Financing Review. Doesn't that sound like an exciting title? We can't wait to learn more about what Al's background is and what he does there at beyond the title. He is the one of the foremost commentators on MBSs and RMBSs for Thomson's, as well as his main focus and expertise includes MBS, CMBS, primarily this and secondary trading. Industry-related pronouncements and intraday flows, trading and spread analysis. Joe, we're going to get some great information. And one of Les Parker's favorite topics, convexity hedging tendencies. Now I know why he's a good friend with Les. Les talks like that all the time. Prior to being there with Thomson Reuters, Mr. Durso worked as an MBS trader in a primary dealer community, such as a distinguished firms like Lehman Brothers, Nomura Securities, Societe Generale. And he holds a Bachelor's of Art degree in accounting, one of Andy's favorite topics, from Pace University, and is a Master of Business Administration from New York University. Les Parker, Parker & Associates, and many of you know him, get his update. If you don't, be sure to ask Les for that. Send him an email to get his updated information. He sent out an update on what's going on. It took me 2 years to be able to read Les Parker's information that he sent out on a regular basis because there's so much jammed into such a little space. But it's really very good as you look at, you know, hedging and looking at what are the direction of the markets. Very, very good stuff. It's a good compliment to what Joe does there at MBS Quote Line. So you have both of those. It's like two eyes in your head. I want to say thank you to both of you for being on the program. Les, are you there?
I'm here.
Good. You're here. You're present. That's good. And Al, do we have you on the – I want to make sure your mics are on and you're live.
Yes, I am.
Good. Well, Al, I know both of you have days off today. Although, Les, I don't know. You never take a day off. You're just going so strong, except on Sundays, of course. But Al, I know you have a day off today, so you're taking the time on Veterans Day to call in. We really appreciate it. And my first question goes out to you. How did hedgers handle the interest rate risk heading towards the election day? I know there's a lot of people trying to figure out how to handle this, and there were some surprises. So how did you guys handle it?
Well, it was really strange. We were coming off the, the Superstorm Sandy. We won't call it a hurricane. It could be a level one hurricane. And traders were just recovering locally, and later in the day on election day, the market really sold off. It was as if they were enforcing a Mitt Romney put on the market. And post-election, after Obama was reelected, the market rallied a point. So it was, the sell-off was kind of odd. I mean, the market loves a reinforcement of the status quo. Don't let them tell you anything different. They love things to be the way they were before, for the most part. So that was a reinforcement. But by the end of the week, we had a further sell-off. It seems like in the secondary market, rates might have come too far too fast in the advent of the Fed's September QE3 meeting.
Interesting. Andy Schell, let's get you in on the broadcast. Let you get in with some questions. I know you, with his background and years accounting, you know, it'd be good for you to jump in, I'm sure.
Well, Dave, I've got my profit and doctor notes right here. Let me put those aside because you forgot about my segment.
I wasn't ready to bring it up at the end because I wanted to talk about the accounting at the end. But I did tell you that. I do apologize.
That's a great point. Communication is essential in all markets, especially in the MBS market. So everybody seems to think that the election reduced uncertainty and therefore will prompt investors to invest now, Al, in the market, given all that's happened. Do you agree with that?
In a general sense, yes. The volatility markets, those lowered post-election. However, spreads just really aren't enticing right now. They've reached sort of a midpoint in the secondary market, and then the primary rates that feed off secondary spreads, as we know, they haven't moved at all. We've been stuck at roughly a 3.5% 30-year for, you know, like a large lender. Am I allowed to mention names of large lenders?
Sure.
Like a Wells Fargo. They went up to 3 5/8. They came back to 3.5. There wasn't much a high degree of correlation with secondary levels. And, in fact, we've got a really wide primary-secondary spread between mortgage rates. So I think we've kind of stalled right here.
Well, Al, it's bad to have something stalled, especially if you're in your car on the freeway. Les, what are your thoughts about this? Do you agree with Al's comments?
Well, Andy, I think the reason that you're last today is we always save the best for last. So,
aren't you kind? Thanks for covering, Dave.
Bad said that.
You know, I understand what Al just said, and that he is absolutely right. That generally speaking, even if the market seems to be rooting a particular way, what it really likes is everything just to remain the same. It feels that it can assess things that are currently the same. But whether or not it's going to prompt investment, that's really, to me, the $10 question or whatever you want to say. I do not believe that investors are ready to loosen the purse strings. I think with the Fed's QE3 and where they are trying to promote investors to go out on the risk curve to invest more is not working. We see right now, Japan just published over this weekend that on an annualized basis, their economy contracted 3.5%. For the quarter, it was 0.9% contraction in Japan. Most forecasters expect at least one or two more quarters of negative growth in Japan, which will mean a mild recession in Japan. They aren't sure that it will last long, but there's a lot of other uncertainties. But in terms of the election, will it prompt investment? I believe the answer is no, because of the fiscal cliff and because of the increase in regulations. That now we have certainty that there's going to be increase in regulation, but increase in regulation reduces investment, not increases investment.
Well, that's a great point, Les. Well, let's shoot back over to Al, and I'm curious, Al, given the election results that are in, and we all know what that means, so how does that impact MBS yields and interest rates generally charged to the borrower? Is this going to be good or bad for consumers in the coming 4 years?
That's going to be predicated upon, you know, how they're going to collapse the primary-secondary spread. You know what? I'm really inclined to say I don't know how much lower rates are going to go. And in essence, you know, in essence, the mortgage market has become a market of refinancers. You know, we've lost that larger percentage of people going out and getting mortgages for a home. It's just people staying stationary and trading down into a lower interest rate, which isn't necessarily bad, but I don't think it's really growing the market. We've got such a backlog of housing inventory, a lot of it foreclosed and REO. We've got to get rid of that first or work that off. That'll take another year and a half easily before we can really expand the market a bit. You know, I think right now we're really locked in a lower rate. In my mind, if the economy does one day wake up and grow, guess what? Rates are never going to be this low again.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. Well, along that same thought then, Les, given MBS yields and interest rates as a result of the election that we just had, what do you think borrower costs are going to be going forward?
You know, Al's making great points on where the borrower is in these yields. I'm very concerned about where the primary market is, that is, what the interest rates that are offered to consumers versus the secondary market. We see some of this lower movement in the secondary market yields, and yet it really doesn't translate to lower consumer costs. Well, the biggest reasons for the spreads to remain wide between what the lender's cost, you might say, is versus what is passed on to the consumer. Why is there a wide spread there? It is because of the regulatory uncertainty. Well, now we have certainty, but the certainty is we will have a lot of regulation. We only have a third of Dodd-Frank implemented right now, only a third. So now instead of the uncertainty of, oh, maybe there's a chance we won't have to fully implement Dodd-Frank, we do have to fully implement Dodd-Frank. Maybe we won't have to there'll be some improvement in the investor environment. Well, now we know there won't be investor environment changes because the taxes will be going up. So we have certainty, but it does not loosen up the purse strings for the investor. And we have lenders that are being threatened with further lawsuits, not fewer lawsuits, by different regulators. So I still see the spreads between the MBSs and the rate that actually goes to the borrower remaining wide for an extended period of time.
Well, unless this is Joe Farr, I too seldom hear people talk about one of the very direct effects of guarantee fee increases is just that. I mean, the primary-secondary spread kind of ignores, hey, a good part of that's going to go to the agencies.
Well, there's no doubt about that, is there, Joe? I mean, we did have 10 basis points increase. It went in effect November 1st for cash trades and goes in effect for the MBS trades on these first. You know, it kind of makes me think, when people hear that, they think, well, isn't that kind of like change in Great Britain, them deciding to drive on the right-hand side of the road, that the first month they're going to have trucks go to the right side and the next month they'll have cars?
Right.
It's kind of like that, but there is actually this little bit of delay going into securities. But no doubt about it, 10 basis points higher. We had the last one. I'd like to hear Al's thoughts on the guarantee free being flowed through. I know he has some thoughts on that.
Well, in terms of the traffic or the frequency of loans, that'll slow it down. I'm looking at the increase in these fees, and a lot of it, you know, it seems like it's derived from balancing a budget or a revenue offset. So, you know, who knows how much of that they're going to keep plowing in as we look at the fiscal cliff and a greater government deficit. You know, how much are they going to funnel back into a lot of these fees? And if they're going to keep propping up the guarantee fee, in my mind, that leads me to believe that, you know, in a later discussion, that this hybrid public-private GSE security is pushed off that much more.
Al, I'm concerned that when the Fed when the Treasury decided that it wanted to increase guarantee fees, and the rationalization was, well, we want to replicate what the market would look like if the GSEs weren't guaranteed by the government. Well, that's a canard. All they're really saying is that we want to raise taxes, and we want to raise it in a way that nobody will question us that we're raising taxes.
That's exactly right.
So now we have the greater uncertainty is how much more are they going to raise them? They want to use the argument of what would market be without a government guarantee? Well, guess what? It's not 10 basis points.
That's for sure. I can't even peg where the private label pass-through security is now, because we really don't have a secondary or a new issuance private label market. You have one or two issuers. Back in the days before the crisis, was it 200 basis points? Again, you were talking about the investors not loosening the purse strings. Well, they're not doing that for agency paper. They're definitely not doing that for non-agency. They need a lot of yield up front to take the next step to, a private label mortgage security.
90% of the market right now is guaranteed by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And the other 10% is Redwood Trust and a few others that are out there doing some play or whole loan
transactions. Is it 90 less, or is it it's even worse than
95.
That, isn't it? Is it
might be 95 in my mind. And
yeah,
also, a lot of it stays on the bank's book. They don't go to market with the security because the spreads aren't there. So they'll leave that loan on their books and just collect the coupon.
Exactly.
And that's thwarting the price discovery as to what the spread might be. In a general sense, as Les said, it's pretty wide. Without that agency backing, you lose a lot of foreign dollars and a lot of large investors who help really keep the mortgage rate down.
Well, isn't that the only reason why foreign investors are buying mortgage-backed securities right now is because it has the full faith and credit of the U.S. government?
Yes, that's exactly why Japanese investors have been buying Ginnie Mae's, which are the direct, even though we know Fannie and Freddie are quasi-direct, or now they're conservatorily direct, Japan has been buying Ginnie Mae's just for that reason.
I find it fascinating that corporate spreads right now, you can actually invest in corporate bonds, particularly Exxon, and Johnson & Johnson, you can get their duration equivalent issues cheaper or at lower rates than treasuries. What does that tell you, Al? I was been pondering that one.
I'll get done scratching my head on that in a few minutes. I don't know why you would pay through the riskless curve, which are treasuries. And I had been on a panel discussion earlier in the year, and they were talking about this public-private mortgage market going forward. And one of the panelists said, we need the agency mortgage market. That represents the riskless curve that we price from. So to have a corporate that trades through riskless, that befuddles me.
Well, keeping this on track as a mortgage focused program, and while the corporate bond spreads are really interesting, let's focus back just for a second and talk about the election and how that affects due diligence and compliance and issues relating to mortgage bankers. So, Al, what are your thoughts on that?
It heightens it. I think it keeps the inertia going for the current administration and all the legislation and discovery. And, Les was talking about one-third of Dodd-Frank, and I was thinking in my mind, does that encompass 500 pages, 600 pages? Because it's a long bill, and, they want to get back in. And we were talking about the Mortgage Banker Association, and I was at one of their conferences a couple of years ago before everything really melted down, and they said, unless we get our house in order, you're going to have the government tell you what to do, and you don't want that. Well, that's where we're at right now with Dodd-Frank.
Exactly where we're at, yeah.
And I'm seeing many of the parts of the proposal, and the one that really makes me chuckle is the Volcker Rule about restricting risk-taking for banks. And in my mind, being a middle-aged guy, I'd say, to be flattering, that just reminds me of Glass-Steagall getting repealed in the late 90s. You were taking risk and putting it back in banks. Now you want to take it out again. they just want to control every aspect of investing, some of it for a more conservative approach, which generally you can't disagree with. And then you were talking about the mortgage database recently. And what are they going to use? The government wants to get their hands into every aspect of everything and control every outcome. Realistically, I don't think they can do that.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Volcker because he brought us 21% interest rates, and then his last public effort was the saving of Arthur Andersen, which we know how that went.
When we were at the National MBA, the number one topic by far was compliance. So mortgage bankers are all feeling this on compliance. You hear it from loan officers, mortgage originators, the heads of sales, that they are all feeling it from their compliance departments. They're having to conform now. Now, the negative side is you have to now cross T's and dot I's. The positive side is all you have to do is cross T's and dot I's. That's the problem with government control. It doesn't enable you, a market to grow, expand, to adapt as environments change. It is forces everyone into a rules and regulations compliance rather than trying to meet consumer needs.
A lot of that's coming out of Dodd-Frank, right? The rules and regulations, and much of the industry hoped a Romney victory would have had an impact on Dodd-Frank and it's going forward. Since it didn't happen that way, do you see any chance for a change in what's coming out of the Dodd-Frank Act?
Well, it's interesting that the CFPB actually wants looser underwriting guidelines. Now, does that really surprise anyone? Because it's the same people that also wanted affordable housing. But they want looser what a qualified mortgage is. And then, of course, we have to end up coming with a for the QRM after we get the QM. So we're still going through this evolution of, well, what's going to be a qualified mortgage? And they don't want to allow mortgage or any lender to have an absolute safe harbor. So we still have a long ways to go, but there is the effect of the election is clearly we're going to have a heavier government hand. We're going to have to conform to these various regulations. They're going to drive underwriting as codify underwriting as government rules. And when, the more you do that, it constrains market. The more it constrains market, you have fewer consumers. You have lower velocity of money. I mean, it all leads to is a slower economy, not a faster growing economy. So there's a lot of people who think, oh, we're going to have inflation right around the corner. We're going to have huge inflation. Buy gold today. Well, I think we're going to have stable interest rates for an extended period of time because regulations constrains. It doesn't expand. And even though we have all this money supply out there and we say, all it takes is just the match. Well, the match is velocity of money. You have to get turnover. You have to get transactions. And so until you get a healthy economy globally, not just in the United States, globally, you're not going to start burning up all that money. Now, once that happens, then we get a whole nother issue. We will, in fact, get inflation through that. But I don't see that anytime soon.
Al, your thoughts? Do you share Les's thoughts? We're going to have just low interest rates for into eternity?
Not eternity.
For the foreseeable future. I mean, the Fed is the Fed hasn't abandoned their Operation Twist or keeping long-term rates down. That'll happen at the end of the year. They're always there to step in. They're looking to control where rates are. I think an ironic twist to all this is they're jumping in to tell banks how to invest, what risk profile to take. And when you look in the secondary market, most of the dealers and banks, except for those matching durations, they're really doing just customer flow. So the real risk takers out there are still the hedge funds and the money managers. They're the ones taking on position and risk and placing bets, where you have the primary dealers now are just facilitating customer flows over and above any prop desks or arb desks they have. So I really think the government is leaning on the long end to keep rates lower, And, you know, we're going to need a few prints on non-farm payroll back to the 350,000 jobs created per month like we used to have. You know, currently we're in the 150 range that I don't see us breaking out anytime soon, and I don't see rates moving that much.
That's good. You know, I agree with that. I was having fun with Les on that a little bit earlier. The future of CFPB, it looks like with now that we got another 4 years of Obama, this looks like this could be a permanent fixture. Your thoughts, Al?
I think so. I mean, I see the transparency they want to make. They want to, government warehouse the data, which somebody who grew up reading a 1984 in school, you don't want to see that. You don't want to see Big Brother all over.
George Orwell's book.
You know, the funny – yeah. Well, I saw that referenced in the movie, and my kids didn't know what the heck I was talking about. You know what I'd like to see in a lot of these databases? You know, we have a lot of discovery through the agencies. As an investor, you have reams of information from geos to loan-to-value, everything financial, and I'm thinking the biggest – occurrence from the crisis was this this moral obligation to the mortgage was pushed away and people were walking away from it. It's funny, if you take this data one step farther, you have the income, the ability to meet it. Let's go Big Brother one step better and tell me if the borrower is a family of four with kids in the neighborhood where it's not so easy to walk away from the mortgage, as opposed to somebody who is single can make it purely on a financial basis. You know, really open up the data. Put my picture in there, everything.
Yeah, this is just – I mean, and this, we started – we teased this whole topic last week a little bit talking about the national database. Les, you were listening on that, and it's just fascinating. Les, give us some thoughts on that. Just tease that, and then I want to talk about something that's near and dear to your heart recently, what you're doing with Aclaro, and I want to talk about that. But answer that question. Respond to what Al was saying. This database, it's just George Well, it's just Orwellian. It's just
worse. In a certain sense, the CFPB is Orwellian. But I will say there is one optimistic thing here, because there is going to be some changes in addressing the financial cliff and all. I do think in part of the negotiations there will be brought some oversight of the CFPB. At least that's what I'm hopeful for. That's something that a number of Republicans in the Senate have been pushing for quite some time. It's the reason that there was a recess appointment for the director of the CFPB. I actually think there'll be some type of compromise in the Senate, which will flow through the House and get the signature of the president to modify that. That will be one of the key things. Now, some might say, well, Elizabeth Warren now is in the Senate. She was brainchild of the CFPB, so maybe it won't happen. But I think it will become a bargaining chip, because it's not going to be a principle thing as much as just an item that they'll need to give to the opposition so that they can advance some other agenda. Concerning this national database, one thing to real the national database is a concern. I liked what the National Mortgage News said, that the CFPB and the BMFIFA, the FHFA, are teaming up to create a first of its kind mega database of mortgages to track market trends and support policymakers' research. Well, it sounds all nice and noble, but you have to say, they want to have it be created a comprehensive picture for each loan. I think that's why Al was saying he thinks his picture should be in there. since the National Mortgage News used the word picture, that's probably how Al picked that up. You know how these mortgage analysts are. Sometimes they get a little...
Oh, now be kind, Bjark. This is a first-time guest there. You be kind.
I can't read
that. You're a return...
But, this national database, in theory, is just purely supposed to be for analytical purposes, and it's supposed to be coming from public information. That's why Experian received the contract, an $11.1 million contract to build this national mortgage database. What I find fascinating is that we're going to build this database. It's supposed to be capture 5% of all mortgages out there. How they come up with 5%, how they're going to build it outside of data from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and from lenders and from the servicers, I'm not sure. And I also find it interesting that we end up getting this disclosure of a national database, but I say, well, where was the hearing? Where was the comment period?
Oh, well,
where was the full disclosure to the industry?
It went right along with it's down the same themes of how we got Cordray in the first place.
It must be. So I'm not really sure. They say they can do this because in Dodd-Frank, the CFPB was told that they need to survey mortgage market monthly. That's the that's their rationalization.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm dubious. I'm trying to be as optimistic and objective in this analysis as we can. But Joe, Les, I want to come to you for something that's near and dear to your hearts. This is going to serve as our official ad break here right at the moment. I want to talk about Acclaro, and then we're going to come back getting into the database. I want to get Al's thoughts. We got to leave a little time because we do want to hear about the Prophet Doctor, what he's talking about this week in San Diego. It's really, really important. But I want to get into talking about Acclaro. You made a decision to affiliate with Acclaro. Give us some insights into that.
Yes, Acclaro, by the way, because last time we got a lot of comments back when I was on the show, and we just in passing mentioned Acclaro, but that's spelled A-K-L-E-R-O, Acclaro.
Boy, thank you for doing that at my rate, so I got to write it down.
Yeah. So, you know, the Acclaro, in this whole new environment, actually Acclaro becomes a big winner for mortgage in the mortgage space because – it provides ways to validate data, and really that's the direction everything's going. Even this national database really puts pressure on mortgage companies to manufacture loans to make sure they're defect-free. Dave, I recently came across the stat on being defect-free. I was a little shocked at this, but if you count all the trivial errors that are in mortgages, 70% of mortgages, when we do a sampling, 70% of mortgages have some type of defect in them of their data.
Wow. That's alarming.
70. That's alarming.
That's alarming.
And this was doubly alarming.
And we wonder why we need a CFPB and we need a regulator. I mean, we protested and we kind of go, but that was kind of saying, where did you get the statistic? Where did you get
this? Well, that's actually from Acclaro's discoveries and the way they run it through their systems, because they actually do, they validate the data that's in systems, you know, your LOS, and they validate it against the loan documents. So they create a database from the loan documents. So they scrape the documents for pertinent data. They then compare that to other documents to make sure that that database is clean. And then they compare it against the LOS, and that's how we come up with these statistics. But this one's also amazing. 25% of mortgages have a material defect.
A material defect. You know, 25%. You're going to have to – we got to have good systems. We got to, QC firms are going to be going on – that's why they're so backed up. Every QC firm I ever talked to out there is just overloaded with more work than they can handle because for the first time, you got to take it really serious. It's not one of those
things
you run a report, stick it on a shelf, and check the box. You did it again. You're really looking at it because there's serious consequences. So give us the Acclaro website, and then we got to get back into talking about the database.
Okay, it's www.aklero.com.
That's it. So go ahead and get a hold of Les Parker. Les, how can they get a hold of you as well?
They can always call me at 800-A1-HEDGE. But also my direct number is 865-363-6548. And
all right,
now ParkerandCompany.net. I've got a lot of ways for people to contact me.
You got everybody. Well, yeah, and then they catch you. Then they sometimes you'll get them on the phone, and they'll just be so amazed with all the knowledge you have. So let's get back to the database. That's one of the things. Go ahead. Al, did you have something? Or was it Andy?
On the database?
Yeah, we were talking about the database, and then I'm going to toss it to Joe. Did you have some follow-up on when we were talking about the database a little bit earlier?
Nothing really, just that it seems like it could be used as a political vehicle where they're judge and jury, and I don't know what the end game is. You've got discovery, transparency, adherence to, you know, dotting your I's, crossing your T's, but you know, they're going to take this, if the government controls that, and use it and throw it back in somebody's face with the direction after a fallout. That's my only feeling on that database.
I think you're right, Al. You know, the database, in theory, is going to be available to all other regulators, not just the CFPB, not just FIFA, but it's also going to be available to research, and they say, to the public after it is complete, which the early version is supposed to be, is expected to be complete later this year, but they didn't say if it would be available to the public when they come out with the early versions. They said, well, we still have to determine that. So, I mean, there's already a lot of issues surrounding it. But so should lenders be concerned, Dave? Absolutely, they should be concerned. They had their news release, and they made it clear that the CFPB wants to monitor consumer decisions. This is coming from the release. Consumer decision making and experiences, and then it says, and identify potential problems or new risk.
Yeah, chances are it's not going to be used to heap praise on the industry or to identify a particular lender because they do a great job.
Yeah, Joe, you nailed it. That's exactly it. What is the motive behind this?
Only one way, Dave, for people to protect themselves in. They have to validate their data. They have to validate it against documents. You are right. The compliance agencies or compliance firms are very much overwhelmed. And there's great people. Wurzel Kraut has great underwriters, great people, and they're a great sponsor of your show. And, Aclaro is bringing technology to this industry so we can expand its capacity. So we look forward to working with all the different QC vendors. And we also do QC at Aclaro, but that's the only way they're going to protect themselves.
Well, I'm looking at the clock and seeing how much time we have left. So I have one question for both of you I want to get into. What is the future of the GSEs now that we have another 4 years of Obama? It would seem, I'm anticipating that, you know, nothing's changing. They're going to stay there, and everyone's going to complain about it. Let's start with you, Les.
I was hoping you'd start with Al, but that's all right.
Well, let's go to Al, then.
The white paper.
I want to get clean up this time. You go, Les.
Everyone has to clean up after Les.
Okay, guys, settle down. I'm sure glad there's no ladies here because O'Reilly was put down the other day by saying he can't say settle down. Now, only to men you can say settle down. I didn't know what they were saying. But anyway, here we go. What's the future of the GSEs? I think Al said it earlier. I have to kind of say he's right. I think the government has too much vested now because now they've got a piggy bank to keep they're taking all the income now. For them to try and make changes, it's going to be harder now, not easier. So with this election, it probably pushes it out further. The FIFA has come out with a roadmap for the future, a different housing platform, and it envisions a single GSE changing the ways they can invest. It would be some privatization, but there would be a new issuing platform. So they're going to be around. They're going to be around in different forms, but it's probably going to take a long time. And I want to just add one more thing. I believe DeMarco will be removed. Now, he is a civil servant, so he can't really be fired, but I think he'll be reassigned and there'll be a new appointment, I think, just for political revenge. But I think Al has some different thoughts on DeMarco and even the future. So.
I hope Al's right. Go ahead, Al.
Well, I've got the future as being a lot like the present. When all these white papers were formed about the new market going forward, MBA came out with a white paper in January, talked about this hybrid agency, non-agency paper. FHFA came out in October, pretty much a lot of the same principles. So it's been going on for 3 years since the housing crisis. And in that time, what's happened? They've sort of tightened up the underwriting. Most of the agency paper, and always a good part of the agency paper, predominantly, I don't know, what's the default rate on a prime mortgage, maybe 3% range normal. They're starting to return to profitability. Now the outcries for a new market will be sort of dampened a bit. And plus, you know, the GSE agency market in the secondary sense with Fannie, Freddie, and Ginnie, it's been the most efficient functioning market even in the crisis times of 2008, 2009. Spreads moved out, but it didn't fall apart. It was only the non-agency segment which, you know, it really it grew too far, too fast. You had dealers buying up and down the production chain. I remember Lehman, didn't they buy like Aurora? And
they
controlled the whole feeding chain and pushed it out, and that was the cry for skin in the game. Now that you've got a better post-apocalyptic mortgage going out there, it's more stringent underwriting. You know, the government's complaining not enough people are getting refinanced. Where do we hear that before? 5 years ago, they wanted housing to expand, and here's what, you know, it's like the old Angelo Mozzillo comment under testimony, of course. He said, you wanted this market, and this is what you got. So the fact that it's come back a bit, I think the GSEs, now that they're starting to turn a profit, I think the forward market, they will expand the public-private endeavor, but only as it comments on what would be a private label. If they lower the conforming loan standard, they start lowering that a bit, that will open up more loans that possibly could realize in this agency, non-agency market. If they can keep the conforming limit as high as it is, there's no extra loans to create this new market. So I think we're status quo.
I must say that 100
times a day, but we're status quo.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's going to be anything more than that. But, you know, it'll, for certain, we're going to see some things change in certain aspects of the political environment. But I don't know that we're going to see anything change in the mortgage environment. Folks, we've had as our special guest Al Durso, Senior Market Analysis for MBS International Financing Review, Thomson Reuters. Also along with Al has been his good friend Les Parker, and we're of Parker and Company, and it's just been a real honor to have both of you. I want to say a special thank you, both of you, to come in. Alan, Les, got to get you back. And Les, so good. You great job on the first time on the broadcast, and we definitely want to have you back and get more of your commentary on all that's going on.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. You bet. You guys have a wonderful rest of the week. Again, happy Veterans Day to the both of you, and thank you for taking time to get and be a part of the broadcast. Appreciate it very much.
Same to you. Thank you, Dick.
You bet. Andy Schell, Profit Doctor, I apologize for not communicating this very effectively earlier. In fact, I didn't communicate at all. What do you do when you do with your friends, those closest to you? Everyone knows how close your friends we are, so you don't communicate the poorest of them. I do want to talk about what you're doing this week in San Diego and kind of give our listeners a little bit of insights to the topics you're going to be doing there. So this is the Profit Doctor, Andy Schell.
Hi, Dave. So you mean to talk about San Diego, well, the weather is just about perfect year-round. There's lots of big ships to look at. It's a great place to go to have a quick retreat from the snow in the Northeast. Oh,
yes,
you want me to talk about what we're going to talk about, the seminar?
Yeah.
Oh,
seminar. Are you
ready?
You're just still chatting to me that I put you at the end and didn't tell you about it. But anyway, so
well,
what
I had
are
a really cool
segue that?
From I had a really cool segue from Alice's thing on fair lending too. Well, they the conference in San Diego, we're going to be talking about merger and acquisition, specifically looking at commercial banks and mortgage banks and the merging of the two that's taking place all over the country. We have more M&A activity happening now than I think we've ever seen. And it's a great opportunity to increase returns, increase yields. Banks are doing phenomenally well in launching, expanding, growing, acquiring commercial mortgage banks. But there's a lot of pieces to it. There's a lot of things you need to realize, and not of the least of which is understanding the financial components, understanding due diligence, understanding system integration, understanding all the pieces that come together to make a successful merger and acquisition.
And you're going to be talking about all of that?
Yes, we are. We're going to be talking about all of that at the conference, the MBA Accounting Financial Management seminar in San Diego this week, Wednesday, Thursday. We're going to be there talking about merger and acquisition activity. How much is your company worth? How much do you have to pay to buy one? We're going to talk about that too.
That's outstanding. Folks, we appreciate you being with us. Check out Andy out in San Diego. If you're going to be there, be sure to get into his sessions. It's very good. I will also be out there speaking at another conference. But we wish you all a very good week and look forward to having you back next week. We're going to be continuing discussing all that. What does this all mean, this election? We continue our discussion on that. But thank you so much for tuning in with us. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you next week.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.